This discharge or forced abnormal discharge, the discharge. One of the factors that was noticed, and I repeat that when I spoke to Glenn and Dick about it, is that when we have five women trying to push the heavy car, then after a while, there is a need for one woman with one finger to sustain the motion. When we have a plane that uses the power to lift itself to the height of 10 kilometers, then the friction of the air is much smaller, and then there is a need of that finger of the woman just to sustain the motion. Most of these guys, they claim that this small amount of energy is being driven from that spontaneous discharge that activates electromagnetic device that actually interacts with magnets. And the magnets that most of the cases are being used, there are neodymium magnets, earth magnets. Now, the first question that I have for Dick is that true or false? If we state that over unity exists, that the perpetual motion cannot exist without over unity, because over unity is needed for the perpetual motion to be present. And the second question is, if we have something that has 100%, and this 100% is consumed for sustaining the power, then the devices that were presented, if these devices exist, and plenty of people say that it exists, has to have more than 100%, let's say 110%, where 10% is being used to produce the electricity. I believe the biggest chaos or the biggest movement among the people that decided to go to the perpetual motion devices is because of John Bendini. Bendini, in 1984, built the first motor that was producing over-unity effect, and since then, many people claim that they repeated that concept. They were able to replicate that successfully. But the first guy, actually, who to be blamed about for it, is Mr. Tesla. In 1897, he was financed by J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan was the one, based on most of the factors that I was able to find out in the literature, who actually stopped the advantage in this matter. And also, the reason that he did that was that it was not in his best interest to create free energy devices or to create any kind of technology that would be of use for everybody. Back to you, Dick, and to Exeon.
As you guys may be able to tell, Wesley, Glenn, and I had one or two conversations earlier in the week on this particular subject. Wesley started off quite skeptical about these excess energy-like machines, energy-harvesting machines. And as Wesley did more and more research into the subject and the history of them, he's become more convinced that they're possible. I'm not yet convinced, and I know Glenn is not yet convinced. I started off quite skeptical because excess energy machine, perpetual motion machines, from my point of view, they appear to be a strong violation of first, second, and third law of thermodynamics, second law in particular. They are appear to be in strong violation of conservation of energy. Let me drop for a second. It's interesting to study them. And one of the studies that Wesley has done, and quite possibly, if you request, he can ship you a copy of the email that he sent me. And by the way, your extra emails a day later, I did arrive, I just arrived late. I got them all. But Wesley's first email was 18 separate references on these machines, coming from places like Australia and Hungary and Russia and the United States and so on. So there's lots of literature on the subject on YouTube. And the majority of the first 18 references that Wesley has given me are YouTube references. We got a little bit careful, a little bit careful about a YouTube reference, because as I indicated to Glenn and to Wesley, one of the references, one of the movies that was on YouTube about a year and a half ago was four cell phones on a table with a small pile of unpopped popcorn, and the four individuals turned on the four cell phones, and the popcorn began popping. And there's a version of that with Western people, there's a version of that with, I think they were Scandinavian people, and there's another version with Oriental people. And when you study the four movies on the YouTube, on that particular one, you'll suddenly discover that the exact same background with different individuals was being duplicated. Eventually, the man who made that particular video came forward and said he did it as a joke, and he was amazed that so many people took it serious, particularly the people who believed that cell phones were dangerous. A significant number of those people took it serious. So now you've got to worry about what is on YouTube, and let me explain what I mean by that. As long as you've made a movie that you want to apply to YouTube, and if it doesn't violate profanity, if it doesn't violate pornography, and if it doesn't violate religious objections, as long as you don't make people unhappy, your chances of getting your movie on YouTube are quite good. YouTube's main motivation in life is to have people come to their website, and that in turn has the capability of turning out revenue by way of advertising. So YouTube would like their movies to be attractive. I remember seeing some movies on YouTube where a magician walked through a plate glass window on the front of a store. And again, it was a Photoshop-like creation. So the fact that a large number of references are on YouTube scares me a little bit. Some of the YouTube videos look very authoritative on this excess energy. You see voltmeters and ammeters looking at the raw power going in. You see voltmeters and ammeters measuring the power coming out, and the power coming out appears to be greater than the power going in. The fact that it's on YouTube, in my mind, and in Glenn's mind, I believe, does not make it traceable to the Bureau of Standards. Let me drop. In order for me to have respect for an article that appeared to be showing excess energy, and by the way, one other thing I should break in here, there are five patents on the subject. The fact that the United States Patent Office and maybe other patent offices in foreign countries have issued a patent on these energy conversion excess energy machines, that in itself is not proof that it's real. You can get a patent on things that might not work as long as no one objects to it, as long as the idea is unique, apparently useful, and not overly obvious for one skilled in the art of things that already exist, you can get a patent. The patent office likes issuing patents because they create a revenue from them. You pay a certain fee every few years to keep your patent current. So the fact that there are patents, the fact that there are a large number of movies on from a large number of countries and companies on YouTube, to me is not enough. You might ask, what would please me? Well, a major organization, a research institute, would help. If there was an article in the Science Magazine, the weekly journal of the American Association for for the Advancement of Science, a peer-reviewed article in a respected journal. Boy, that would help an awful lot. It's easy for someone to come up with a conspiracy theory saying that, yes, this exists, but the major organizations have boarded up, and because they have a financial interest in making sure that no one has access to it, it's easy to come up with a conspiracy theory. That, to me, is not enough. So you can tell what I need in order to get on the bandwagon to have the faith. But because essentially every... Let me drop. And Alex recognized the fact that a large number of countries and a large number of movies and a large number of companies, that's not enough. Every Western nation, every developed nation, has an educational process that teaches the theory of conservation of energy and second law of thermodynamics. And if you look directly into conservation of energy, they call it a law because they say, although you can't completely prove that it is a universal law, they will say that they don't know of a major, well-documented exception to the law, therefore they believe it to be a law. So do these machines really produce, Wesley's first question is, do these machines produce over unity? By way of the YouTube videos, they appear to be. I'm not yet convinced. I believe Glenn is not convinced. Now, because this is an electrical property, and we amateurs are very interested in electrical functions, we really like to be able to generate kilowatts and megawatts of power without paying for it to run. Eric would love to have many kilowatts and fractions of a megawatt of power to go into his broadcast station and not have to pay for it. It sure would be nice if this was a reality. And is more than 100% efficiency required to make it all happen when you look at the big picture? Of course. So I'm not yet convinced. I think we need something with a little more peer review before I get on the bandwagon. It worries me a little bit that this might be cold fusion again. Cold fusion came from a respected University of Utah. Pons and Fleischman, two respected professors, had done a number of experiments on cold fusion. Let me drop. A number of universities, a number of testing laboratories, got on the bandwagon real fast, and some of them at first thought they saw the excess energy of the cold fusion of experiment of about 20 years ago. This is where you take slightly fluffed up palladium and put hydrogen into it at the right pressure and temperature, and it starts giving you energy output greater than the energy that you put in. At first, cold fusion looked awful good. Again, well, in that case, if it really was fusion, at least you had an explanation by way of E equals MC squared of how mass could be converted to energy, and it wasn't necessarily free energy. And there's also a number of places where you can get free energy, photovoltaics and wind and tide and geothermal and so on. But there you can quantify the input and output and see what's going on, and there appears to be no violation. These experiments on this energy conversion appears to be a violation. And so I'm starting off awfully skeptical. But in the process of all of us setting it, we're going to become smarter. We're either going to become smarter about the techniques that are being used by possibly charlatans, or possibly we're going to become smarter about something brand new that hasn't been well documented up till now. Nikola Tesla, supported by J.P. Morgan way back in 1897, was by way of his great big laboratory out in Shoreham, Long Island. He was going to come up with this great big transmitting tower by which he was going to transmit power wherever it was required without wires. And great sounding concept. Here we are, 100-some-odd years later, and it's not really a reality. Alex, what do you think of those YouTube videos and whether or not we can get all of this excess power? N2NNU, K2RIW in the Tech Net.
Well, want to know? I was listening to your discussion a couple of days ago with Wesley and Glenn and stuff like this. Couldn't interrupt because I had some other things to do. But I think we are using words we don't to understand how to use them. First of all, let's define what free energy means. Does it mean that it comes free to you, the user? Does it mean that the harvesting of it, is it free? What does it mean to Wesley, free energy? I believe that it means free harvesting. So, it doesn't mean that he will generate energy. Energy cannot be created. First thermodynamics law says energy cannot be created, cannot be destroyed, it can be only transformed. So if somehow Wesley gets some quote-unquote free energy, that means that he has to steal it from somewhere. And it's interesting to know from where it comes from. I dwelled into this issue for about 5 years, a long time ago. There is a nice little book out there called Free Energy Generation by Bendini-Birnbaum. And they have circuits and schematics all describing how it works and whatnot. And after tinkering for 5 years with it, I gave up. Because I never could duplicate their results. And they were telling me that I had to tweak and tweak and tweak and tweak. So after that, I gave up. However, let me drop. One of the authors of the book has quite an interesting background. He's a nuclear engineer, lieutenant, Colonel Thomas E. Burden, at the United States Army retired. Let's see. Member of the Mensa Society for the Investigation of American Physics Teachers, Air Force Association, the Association of the U.S. Army, the American Nuclear Society, and the American Defense Preparedness Association. He is currently the director of the Association of Distinguished American Scientists, ADAS, and CEO of CITEC. So this guy has to have some marbles under his skull. What the book has a very interesting chapter is that what in fact it happened, they have siphoned out energy from the dark energy, the matter that we know it's there, but we don't know where it is. If that is so, then this is what we thinking is the free energy. There is no something like that with a COP greater than one. That's impossible. It's just that we are accumulating in our capacitor something a little bit more energy than we expected to. So that's what my take of this subject is. First, it's not proven. Second of all, it is possible if we siphon out energy from another source that we don't yet how to handle. Back to you, Dick.
Wesley and Dwayne.
Sounds like Wesley would like to do a little rebuttal, possibly, on what Alex just said. Go ahead, Wesley.
Well, actually, I completely agree with Alex. And I especially like the term stealing energy. I do like that. What it looks like, actually, the energy that is being used to sustain the motion and produce over unity is the stolen energy. When I was analyzing most of this project, especially Bendini motor, I found over 300 people claiming that they were able to replicate Bendini motor. And actually in 1984, that motor was actually made by him and his wife. Now, they started with very simple concept. The Bedi motor was the DC drive pulsating motor with the battery. And charging another battery with efficiency over 100%. What they did is actually that they used the discharge. That was the second project that they did, discharge or pulse abnormal glow discharge, to create the rapid voltage that was delivered to the electromagnet. And this electromagnet was actually sustaining that motion, that little finger of the lady, this is what I said. And all of this project that I saw from around the world, plenty of them, you're going to find plenty of them, they have the same factors. And I repeat again, Tesla, capacitor, coil, spark, magnet. Bendini, the same. Kapanadze, Russian guy, the same. The I went to the Japanese, and Japanese, I do not have exactly the name in front of me, they actually repeated the same. What I find out about the spark, that in small modules, you do not really need to go to the Tesla coil. It is enough for you to just use the buzzer, regular buzzer that you have for the door, the buzzer. And you simply put the pressure on it, and you find out. Okay, no, okay, fine. And so that vibrating part that is on this buzzer stops to vibrate, but creates that abnormal glowing with that little gap that is in between. Other people, they use the small bulb, what is it, that the iron bulb, just to create this spark. But most of these guys never invented anything else. And also, in 95%, I would say 7% of all of this project, there was a motor that was used similar to the Tesla squirrel cage. Back to you, Dick, and to Jim.
Something to add about patents, Dick. Now, some of these motors that are capable of producing excess energy, free energy, and whatever, run in the megawatt region, and some of them run much, much smaller. To prove the concept doesn't require huge size. A small one will prove the concept. So therefore, I'm going to ask you an extremely direct question, Wesley. Do you, Wesley, N2XJN, have enough faith in this concept that you are willing to construct one? If not, why not? N2XJN, K2LIW.
Okay. This is N2XJN. You're asking the question like, do you want to deliver the mathematical formula how to add figures together? 1 + 1 = 2. Well, there was once when the people could not do it, and was in early humanity time, for the people who believed in Darwin's theory, or any other one. My understanding is that there are people who need to touch it, and there are people who just need to know how it works in order to know that it works. You are obviously the one who needs to touch it. And I'm the one who thinks that if I'm able to gather the most of knowledge about it, I start at least to believe that it exists and it is possible. And of course, the end of that would be to see it. Would I would like to contact one? Yes. Yes, I would like to. But at the same time, I don't want to go through the all of the errors and pain of the guys who are working on it. What I'm trying to find, and I did find few, is precise copy of somebody's invention that was already standard by others, that was replicated, and then replicated myself. As everybody of you, I don't want to pay to you through these companies. But at the same time, I very much respect the words of Alex, who said, at least I understood from that, you will never have the free energy. You will always pay for that energy. If there is a chance to have the free energy, there would be somebody, at least, who keeps the button right on it and lets others pay for it. Or there would be a government who just wants to make the money on the licensing fee. There would be anybody. At least that's what I understood from the words of Alex. Dick, back to you, Andrew.
JT2QIQ with a comment.
That's also intuitive.
I'm going to go to Alex and then Glenn in that order. The word patent does not stop you from building or owning one of these. It stops you from manufacturing it and cutting into the inventor's cash flow. You could financially hurt him, injure him, and you'll be sued. But if you build one for yourself, and because a patent by definition must fully describe the process so that a person skilled in the art is able to duplicate the invention, a patent must be written that way. So, since there are 5 patents on it, the information as to what it is and how to build it must be there. Otherwise, it's not a real patent. And so for Wesley or Alex or Glenn or Dick to build one is not in violation of any government policy, not in violation of any law, not in violation of patents. So I'm now going to ask Alex, do you have enough faith in the possibility of gathering free energy that you're willing to build a working model? N2NNU, K2RIW.
First of all, patents, Dick. This Vendini and Bearden are bragging about their patent, but if you read very attentively the document, it is a provisional patent. And I called up the patent office. They said the patent office makes a policy not to issue patents for perpetuum mobile or whatever that is called. You know what I'm talking about. No matter how good it looks, they will not issue a patent for that. So don't worry about patents. So, yes, I did fall in that trap about 7 years ago. I spent about 5 trying to make the Bendini motor running and didn't. So after 5 years, I said, enough is enough. So let it, put it aside, gather some dust, and perhaps the dust will make it run. Back to you.
Okay, interesting answer. I don't have to ask Glenn if he has enough faith that he's willing to start building one. He's willing to look further into it to find out if it's real. But I know that he's skeptical. I know that I'm skeptical. And maybe even your skepticism is even greater than mine, Glenn. KC2QIQ, where do you stand on what you know so far, K2RIW?
Well, I tend to stand by science. Science is kind of like my area of study, and I don't believe that anything's going to go beyond unity. But here's something for thought. And if you look at stability systems, in other words, now we're not violating any laws of physics here or anything else. If we take a system and drive it to the point of instability, which basically means like if you have an amplifier and you put a signal inside and it's got an external power source to another part of the amplifier, you can drive it into a self-oscillating mode where now it's drawing out for a very, very little amount of input power. It starts circulating a lot of output power in a self-generative type of mode. Now, let's say we're not using a power source that's a power utility or something else, and we take a system that is inherently unstable, and we put a small amount of fossil fuel power into it to get it to go into a self-instability mode. And then we attach a coupling device to this unstable device, which is not using utility power, but maybe other forms of nature, wind power, other things around the outside of it, that are driving it into this unstable mode. And we're able to couple the unstable power off of it at a rate at which we can make usable power out of it. That's a possibility. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Bonnie.
Yeah, I can tell that... K2KEY, Mel thinks rather skeptically of that. Do you have enough faith in the possibility, Glenn, that you're willing to build a small working model? Over to you, Glenn.
Well, here's the thing. I would say no, because there's two big problems with that. One is that, first of all, I would have to find something that, where if I were to drive a small amount of power into it, that it would make it unstable, to a source of power that I'm not paying for. So, I mean, I've heard stories in the past that you could take a pendulum and put it on a bridge, and it would drive the bridge into an instability where it eventually would build up enough energy as to collapse. Obviously, I don't want to do this to a bridge. But if there were another mechanism where you could put a small amount of energy in and drive it to the point of instability, like if you draw your Nyquist limit and then start approaching your minus one line, you can drive something into instability. We do it with that's how oscillators work. But we're paying for that energy because we're putting the power through a B-plus source, a battery source, or a power supply to drive the oscillator. But it runs on its own. But you just need that little bit of kickoff power to get it started. Now, the idea is if you can take a small amount of fossil fuel power, a power that we're paying for, and get it into an unstable system, the possibility is first you'd have to know what that unstable device is, and that it could be powered by power that you're not paying for, you know, fossil fuels or other externally generated power, just something that nature will respond to, this instability. And then you have the third problem. Now you need the coupling device. Somehow, whatever this instability is, you have to couple it, and then you put it back into some kind of electrical or mechanical energy which you could use again. So I've got, like, at least two variables there that I don't have an answer for, but I think there is a possibility that it can happen without violating any laws of science.
Brent. Oney again.
Yeah, I'm going to turn it over to Mel in a second. When it comes to that pendulum that can damage a bridge, yes, there have been bridges in the past where the designer did not take into account all possible modes of resonance. The Tacoma Narrows Bridge is the classic case, which got destroyed on a particular day where the wind was blowing at just the right rate. Had the wind been blowing faster or slower, the bridge would have survived. There was a critical wind velocity where that particular bridge could not tolerate, and it became unstable. As a result of that, many other bridges were suddenly redesigned and extra stiffening was put into them, like the Brooklyn Bridge, for instance. Inside of the World Trade Center, they worried about whether or not the whole building would sway in a certain kind of windy day, and a dampening device was placed inside of the World Trade Center. So if you're smart enough, you can design a system so that it is incapable under reasonable circumstances of becoming unstable. Now, you're talking about intentionally creating instability, hoping to harvest free energy, stolen energy. When you steal energy, I think 99.9% of the time, you're going to end up paying for it. If it really was that free, we'd be doing it a long time ago. But maybe there's a possibility. Mel, I don't have to ask you if you're going to build one. K2KEY, K2RIW, go ahead, Mel.
Hey, this is K2K. Well, if you want to waste your time, go ahead and enjoy yourself. Sit down, wait, stop, sit down, look at the formulas of Maxwell and Lorentz, and then look at, and show me you feed it to this formula, the information on the floor, the thermodynamics, and how you're going to defeat them mathematically, and you could look at an experiment, very interesting experiment, that proves that this is not possible. And I'm going to give you what the experiment is. Look it up. Faraday's floating magnet. Say it. Faraday. There was an experiment that was done a number of times in laboratories to prove this perpetual motion can't be achieved, and it's called Faraday's floating magnet experiment. Dick, over.
EC2QAQ with a comment.
Mel, we got a little bit of a problem with that one. Once you accept superconductivity materials and you place them in front of a magnetic, and place them in front of a magnet, you can now get floating magnets. I've seen a number of those movies, not on YouTube, on the slightly more authoritative places like Nova and Nova Now or Science Now, Science Frontiers. I've seen floating magnets. Once you accept superconductivity, I wonder if you've accepted. I wonder if you've seen that, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Come in.
Yes, of course. But that experiment, you, I taking this down to absolute zero. That how magnets make differences. Ever you can absorb an additional amount of energy from the law of thermodynamics. You can't make it, you can't get 100, let's put it this way. If you could approach 100% efficiency, you've got to go 100%. You've got to go more than that. There is no way, according to the law of thermodynamics, that this can be achieved by any method. And that was part of the experiment, Dick. So, it's not going to happen. Because it can't fit, but even the way they did it, it does not fit the law of thermodynamics, the second law, over.
I hear you. Glenn, and then Alex, I think it was in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I think what's happening here is no one's disagreeing with that, Mel, that definitely you can't. I mean, even in a simple electrical circuit, if you understand Ohm's law, you can't have an electrical or a current flow without a resistance. I mean, every law of science shows loss, empathy, in your one-half LI square law, everything, every form of science that we know of says there's no such thing as greater than unity power. But that's not what I was talking about. What I'm saying is this. If you have a building and it's swaying because the wind is blowing through it and causing it to be unstable, you have to put a device inside of it to basically dampen the building so it will flex and basically remove the energy or absorb that energy so that the building won't collapse. And the same thing with bridges. You have to put stiffening and dampening in to prevent the bridge from collapsing because as the wind is going through it, it's causing a unstable mode. Now, whatever that dampener is, it's just wasting the energy or just basically pushing it off to the side so it can't be used. I'm saying, now, what if you design a system where you're actually tickling that instability and then the dampening device is now the device that's producing power? That's basically what I'm saying, which is not violating any laws of science anywhere. KC2, QIQ.
Okay, you could, if you want to, take that dampening device that was in the World Trade Center, and it was using friction to do its dampening. It had a mass near the top of the building. As the building would sway, the mass would move at a rate that's different than the building, and there was friction between the two. And you could put some kind of a thermal engine accepting that frictional energy of that damping device and get the power or energy back out of it. But it really was not just a very expensive wind generator, a wind turbine, if you know what I mean, using the hold-on building. And yes, to a certain degree, it's free, but would you get enough out of that to make it worthwhile? I mean, you're not likely to build a structure much bigger than the World Trade Center. The total amount of instability that building had was significant. The total amount of energy you could get out of that dampening device maybe is worth fighting for. It's not going to run the hold-on building, but it could save you some money. You and I could calculate within reasonable magnitude, how much we can get back out of it. Is it worth the investment? I think I'd rather put up a conventional wind turbine. I'll back you on that one, Glenn. K2LIW.
Oh, absolutely, Dick. Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, when you're talking about solar panels and wind power, that to me is your free energy. I mean, you know, you're getting it from a source outside, and you can store it in batteries. It's very well understood, and I'm surprised it hasn't taken off more than it has, because the more popular it becomes, the materials become less expensive, and it becomes more and more usable. But here again, just, you know, kind of like tickling with the idea with Wesley saying, and Alex is talking about has it ever been studied? You know, a lot of times, you know, when we're looking for new sources of energy, sometimes they're right underneath our own nose. You know, you look for devices that we're using as, I mean, just recently, automotive companies now are looking at braking systems. Instead of using asbestos to stop the cars, they're looking at little induction motors. So that basically, as you're stopping the car, using the electromagnetism from the motor in reverse to charge the batteries as the braking system. Another very, very nice way of taking power that we took for granted before and then turning it into something useful. So I think certainly more study could be done in areas where we're just, you know, the power's right underneath our nose, and there might be just ways of reasonably squeaking it out. Just maybe hasn't been studied enough yet.
In the case of the more modern hybrid vehicles, that's called dynamic braking. And so as long as you're not making a panic stop, you can take a significant portion of your kinetic energy of motion that you decide to slow down, and by dynamic braking, your motors at the wheels become generators which charge the battery and puts a significant portion of the energy back in, but you never get 100%. But the hybrid vehicles using that are getting numbers like sometimes 29 miles per gallon. I think it was Alex that wanted to make further comments on this. N2NNU, K2RIW in the tech end.
That was Wesley.
Got it. You got it, Wesley.
Well, it is important, I believe, for this discussion to put distinctively two things aside. One of them, again, is over-unity, and the other one is perpetual motion. I ask you, and I specifically, that I stated that perpetual motion cannot exist without over-unity, because over-unity is needed in order to first sustain the motion of perpetual device, and the second thing is you need access of that energy in order to produce something. But some people are very much happy with over-unity only. And that point, that's what was said. When you have instability mode or any kind of device that is capable of creating effect of over-unity because of whatever mechanism, let's say there is a resonance, I don't believe that that wind in the Carmel bridge was stronger than ever. It was just the wind that created that resonance, that's it. And it's clearly proven that the resonance was a fact of collapsing the bridge. So we have instability mode. Now you said that if you store the energy, you're going to have to pay for it. Wrong. Absolutely wrong. If you use the energy that you never used before, then this energy actually is stolen for free. Now let's say, for the first thing is the magnetism of the earth, magnetic pull of the earth. The second thing is the wind, or the another one is the sun rays. So we're talking about power that is available that was never used. There are many sources of power that we could use. Say we could use the difference between hot and cold air in the atmosphere. Well, we don't know how to do it, or we know how to do it, doesn't matter. There are plenty of sources of energy that we steal and we don't have to pay for it. Back to you, N2XM.
KC2MDP.
Steve? Steve, recognized. One of the guys who is a member of the Long Island Consultants Network has been studying the way the Gulf Stream behaves, and that we would like to take the nutrients that are down below at a greater depth in the Atlantic Ocean and bring them up to the top. And there's also colder water down below and hotter water up top. And by building the right kind of a heat difference engine, you can derive power from that thermal difference versus depth in the Atlantic Ocean. And you can also take the lower, colder water and bring it to the surface and do the churning of the nutrients. And therefore, as you bring colder water to the surface, you create a dampening action, which is opposite of thermal warming, global warming, and has the possible side effect of lowering the number of hurricanes. So there's great benefit you can get out of that. There's also great benefit you can get out of using the Gulf Stream. When it comes to, let me drop, quasi-free energy, or energy that appears to be free that hasn't been used before, Germany is doing a very nice job of that right now. They are subsidizing photovoltaic power. For all of the kilowatt hours you can generate in Germany today, even though the electricity is only worth something like 10 or 12 cents a kilowatt hour, they will pay you 20 cents per kilowatt hour for all of the photovoltaic energy you generate and pump back into their grid. And as a result, a large number of buildings in Germany are now getting photovoltaic cells on their shingles and rooftops. People are buying the land that's being unused alongside of the Autobahn and setting up photovoltaic cells there. So because of the subsidy, they are making a serious commitment for green energy in Germany. It was voted on by the citizens, and the citizens said, we are willing to pay the excess power, the excess dollars, for the energy that we use today from the current grid in order to pay for the subsidy for the people who are generating more photovoltaic power, generating green power. They're putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak. And a very successful system, it appears to be. And I think that's a good model that we should consider. Steve, KCQMDP, K2RIW.
Daniel 2.
Okay, Dick, it sounds like rather than we're talking about creating energy, it's more that we are concentrating energy. I mean, I can go out tomorrow morning, so long as the sun's out, and build myself a fabulous miracle machine there that seems to create energy. I go out there, I take my glass of water, I stick it in the sun. Nothing happens. It gets a little bit warm. Now all of a sudden I take my magical magnifying glass, concentrate it on the water, aim it just right, and voila, my water starts to boil. It's not creating, it's concentrating. Back to you, Dick.
You've got a rather green idea there, Steve, and build a big enough version of it, and some of those experiments have already taken place in the United States. You can make that go. Can you make it economically viable is not easy, but for us to become more green, to have more renewable energy sources, for our government to subsidize those kinds of development and production, to make us more oil independent, has a lot of advantages. It would put people to work who are out of work. We would save an awful lot of money that we're spending on oil. And right now, we are spilling American blood in order to defend those sources of oil. And we're giving money to people in portions of the world where oil is being produced. And some of those people don't like us, and they're using that money in ways that don't make us happy. So there's a lot to be gained by investing in renewable energy resources. And I wish we would do more of it. Alex? N2NNU, K2RIW.
First, let's have a smile. I think you're talking to the very first one, first person that actually discovered and couldn't use the free energy. Oh, well. It never happened, but that's how it goes. I had a meeting with somebody, and I had to wait in front of the Twin Towers. And I was looking to them, you know, from way apart, and I was seeing those big rotating doors going like windmills, people going in and out or whatnot, and they were going like windmills. I said, wow, if I put a dynamo on it, they don't need power anymore for the entire building. I spoke to the building manager and looked at me, are you crazy, man? He said, well, what do you want me to do to put dynamos on the doors? But I tell you, I made some computations that they were about 50 kilowatts per hour there. So, that's how it goes. Now, talking about perpetuum motion. To your surprise, gentlemen, it does exist. It does exist every day of the night, and we can't see it because it's right under your nose. Celestial movement is perpetuum motion for all purposes. The bodies of the celestial universe are moving forever and forever, forever, and the same thing. The trick is they do not have any losses. So the lesson from here is, it's not to get free energy, but to get rid of the losses. If you can get a system without losses, then you get the over unity type of machine. So, just think about it. Rotating doors and celestial movements. Back to you.
I want to add something.
Yeah, it appears as though the celestial bodies move in a lossless manner, but they are coupled to each other in a complicated way. The moon used to be at one-third the distance from the Earth that it is today. I don't know how many million years ago, but it was. The moon's orbit is moving outward at something like 1 inch per year. The moon is further away from the Earth, 1 inch per year. It's gaining continuously. Everything beyond synchronous orbit slowly spirals outward. Everything inside of geosynchronous orbit slowly spirals inward. That's just the way gravity hydrodynamics works. And to make the moon's orbit continuously increase requires a source of energy. Where's that energy coming from? It's coming from the Earth. Our days are becoming longer. The Earth's rotation is slowly slowing down because the kinetic energy of rotation of the Earth by way of the tides is slowly being coupled into the moon. So yes, the celestial body of the moon is increasing in energy, but somebody is paying the price. You and me and our days are very, very slowly becoming longer. The Earth used to rotate more rapidly. A day was less than 24 hours millions of years ago when the moon was closer. N2XJN, KQRIW. Oh, we've only got 3 minutes left. I think we've only got 2 minutes left. Over to you, Alex.
Okay, N2X. Well, I want to add something to that. I believe that change that is happening is not going to affect us or our children any soon. But what's going to affect us is, even in case we say, and it's proven, that over-unity and perpetual motion exists, or just over-unity by itself, or we learn how to take advantage of thermal energy of the Earth or the magnetic field of the Earth, which is being blamed for over-unity, then what it is not in the best interest of any country government to have it done. Why? Because the world, the biggest money is spending for the energy. So, if let's say the guys who claim that they have 25 kilowatts of power right now, the guys from Australia, these guys told us that they're going to be able to manufacture for $5,000 these generators at the end of this year or at the beginning of the next year. If it's going to happen, or if it's going to happen that that project of Hungarian guys that is right now claiming to be 10 megawatts of power, once it's put in motion, it's clear standard, never stop. Then we're talking about a situation in which government will lose a lot of money. Maybe that's conspiracy theory, but correct me if I'm wrong. It is not in best of interest to investigate this kind of technology. But soon, if that technology is proven to be true, you're going to face the situation that no patent law is going to even reinforce of everybody doing that in their own houses, or people just doing the parts and assembling together these devices, because nobody's going to stop it. I have met so many different projects, quite differently done, but all of them consist the same factors. And that's the summary of the discussion. Back to you, Nick, and to Xavier.
Okay, we're going to have to stop for tonight. And I know that last week we said we're going to cover more emails, and we didn't do it. We didn't make our promise, Mel. We got to do better next week. This was segment number 1,281 of the series. Began in 1982 in September. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. Look out for that free energy. Keep a lookout for it. Mel, over to you, sir. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, I'll believe it when I see it. That's it. I'm Missouri. Anyhow, 73. Oh, yeah, I got emails. Dick, I don't even want to get into it. I have had 180 emails. A lot of comments and all, but I don't, we won't get into it, Dick. It's hard to again, discuss the email situation, whether or not we're going to do with it in the future. So, 73 is all. We'll see what we can manage. We'll discuss it next week.
Okay, on the subject of emails, I'm going to repeat the old message. This technical net is orchestrated, run by, organized by, consolidated. Let's see, what do we do? We're interlocutors, minstrel show almost. Mel and Dick gather people for a live show of questions and answers. We do not promise that you're going to get free written consulting service. That was not the original promise. You can write to us, and occasionally you're going to get an answer. It is not promised. Mel has empathy for certain individuals that write to him, and at his choice, he can choose to answer some of those. We are not promising that. So you're taking a risk if you write us an email. No one promised you're going to get an answer. That wasn't the original deal. The gathering of the clan here of hopefully smart people with various comments as to how to make things work better and how to understand them more. It's a live show. That's the main thing we promise. 73, you all. Bye-bye for now. See you down the line. K2RIW clear.